Welcome to the Talented Learning Show podcast series, episode 92, with independent learning tech analyst John Lay. Today I interview Dr. Carl Kopp, director of the Institute of Interactive Technologies at the Commonwealth University of PA, about his new book on action-first learning. You can find more of our fiercely independent content at talentedlearning.com. Well, welcome back, listeners, to the Talented Learning Show podcast. On this show, I'm fortunate to interview the world's leading experts in learning technology from pretty much every perspective, from the vendor, the practitioner, the consultant, and the educator perspective. Today's no different. We got Dr. Carl Kopp back here for the fourth time on the Talented Learning Show on our 92nd episode. Carl's been leading the industry here on topics such as micro-learning and gamification for decades. He is, as I mentioned, the director of the Institute of Interactive Technologies, which is where I graduated from in Commonwealth University 28 years ago, and been in the space ever since then. And so it's always great to work with Carl and see the advances that him and his team is doing at the university and at the Institute. And one of the things that Carl's been working on is this concept of action-first learning. We're going to learn all about it today, what it is, why you want to do it, some real-life examples, advice on how to get going. All of that is what's covered in Carl's latest book on called Action First Learning. And you can look in the description here and get a link to that book to get more information. But from a high level standpoint, we're going to spend our half hour today learning all about this concept. And I can't wait. Carl, welcome back to the Talented Learning Show. Sure, great to have you here.
Hey, John, it's great to be back. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, last time here promoting your book on micro learning, time before on gamification. I'm like a stop on your book tour. This is
you
cool.
Are, yeah, and I really appreciate it. So thanks.
Yeah, no, thank you. This is you've always been our most popular guest. I went back and looked today. This is the fourth time now, and this is episode 92, of course, and the fourth time you've been here across the last 6 years. So wow. Super excited to have you back and yeah. Get this update. So you've been busy writing a new book. Your new book is on action first learning. Tell me about it. What's that mean?
Yeah. So the idea came, so, you know, I've done gamification and micro learning and things. And one of the things that I noticed in a lot of online instruction, as well as face-to-face instruction, is that the beginning of the instruction really sets the tone and it really gets learners thinking. And so, you know, if you teach a class face-to-face and you start out with passive information, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, now let's do an exercise. And people are like, yeah, this, I don't want to do it. But if you go, okay, we're starting out with an exercise, I want you to do this and this, people are like much more energized. And same thing with online learning, you know, when you start out with robust decision-making or having to do something, that sets the tone for doing it later on in that module. Otherwise, people are like, yeah, I don't really want to do this. Drag and drop, you know. So it's the idea of setting the tone so that the learner is engaged right away. The other thing that that does is it sometimes breaks down barriers. So if you give a learner, let's say you do a learning learning objective, and you say, I'm going to teach you five ways to sell. A good salesperson goes, yeah, I know six, you know, this is a waste of my time. But if you go, all right, sell this item to this person now, you don't really have time to process and think. You just go into what you would do naturally. And that action spurs the learning and the thinking. And hopefully, if it's designed right, it may even spur doing something incorrect. Hey, you weren't able to sell that. So then the person goes, I have a gap in my knowledge. How can I fill this gap? And one of the Malcolm Knowles, who, you know, kind of the father of andragogy as opposed to pedagogy, andragogy teaching of adults, basically said that adult learners learn best when they know they don't know something. So if you can have them do some kind of an action or some kind of a decision, and then they find out, ooh, I don't know this, then all of a sudden they're more open to learning. And so that's kind of the idea behind the book and the concepts that are in the book.
Wow, interesting, interesting. Does this fly in the face of traditional instructional design models like ADDIE or SAM, or is it complementary?
Well, I think it's complementary. So the ADDIE model, basically you spend a lot of time in analysis and a lot of time in design, and then you deliver it. Well, I always thought that there was a little bit of a missing piece in, okay, so what should the right design be? What should the right delivery be? And so it's more of a, I always call it action first learning is more of a philosophy. So it dovetails very nicely with Addy and very nicely with Sam. Those are methodologies for creating the instruction. This is a philosophy for what the instruction should be. It should be action fo first, action focused. And there's a lot of terms like active learning and problem-based learning and all that kind of stuff. And what happens is, especially in the academic world, and then it kind of floats over sometimes into L&D, is that people will go, "Hey, that's not really problem-based learning. That's not officially problem-based learning. It should be this, this, and this. Oh, that's not officially, active learning. It should be this, this, and this." And then I think a lot of semantics and a lot of people get caught in like, "Oh, is that the right way? Is that the right?" So I wanted to step back and say, "No, let's do it as a philosophy. There's not a wrong way to do it, but it's a way that I want you to be thinking about doing it, because it's more important, I think, to get people to think about taking action and designing in action in their instruction, rather than arguing over, is it problem-based learning? Is it active learning? That doesn't matter. The fact that we get the learners to do something meaningful, that's what matters."
Wow, interesting. In learning technology, right now there's a lot of this trend towards action learning, but it's not first, as it turns out. But it's later on in the cycle in proving that you can do something and actually demonstrating those skills. But it's typically later on. I haven't heard of anybody doing it first. But one of the big things on, what I'm seeing on the other part of the industry is the scalability or the importance of feedback, in those activities to really help with the learning. How do you handle that? Is that important? How do you do that on an online? Does AI help? Tell me all
Yeah,
about it.
I think feedback's incredibly important for us designers of instruction, and then actually the learners who are learning from the instruction. But the thing about action first learning, they do it later on, but action first is the idea that let the learner make a mistake, let the learner struggle, let them become uncomfortable. A lot of times we try to make the learner as comfortable as possible, and then, okay, now practice. But the problem is that practice oftentimes is not realistic. It's not, it's like the perfect environment, it's the perfect case study, it's the perfect situation. And then when you get back to the job, it's never perfect. So by throwing them in and getting them to think about the elements of that instruction right away, now they're more attuned to what questions to ask, what mistakes they might make, where their assumptions are, and things that the passive kind of, "Oh, do this, do this, do this," overlook. And so I think that's really kind of important. And then as we, I'm really interested in and really big believer in deliberate practice. So it's not practice that makes perfect, it's practice with specific, deliberate feedback, correcting your mistakes. And so if you actually set up action first learning situation and then somebody makes a mistake, now the remedy to that mistake, the feedback is right there in the moment, and that helps. I think it's a lot like, we were talking about kids earlier, but if you think about kids, you can tell them till you're blue in the face, "Don't touch that hot stove," right? And they're still gonna touch it, right? They're still gonna reach out their hand. "And I told you not to touch it. I told you it was hot." You're like, "I know," but it's that human instinct of we need to do something to really get something and to get that feedback. And so that's where I think action learning goes. You can learn lots of different ways. Bandura's social learning theory, you can learn through observation, but I think we've gone too far in the direction of just feeding people information from step one and not really respecting that they bring a lot of knowledge to the table, and that by having them do actions and do activities, that they're actually engaging the full body, the full concept, rather than just kind of sitting back and passively absorbing the information.
Who gives the feedback, Carl? Does it have
So
to be
what,
a
yeah,
human?
that's a great question. Up until recently, the designer designed in the feedback to the situation, like if you do a branching scenario, ask a question. But I'm experimenting more and more, and many people are, with AI. And AI now can do, for instance, I have a chat bot that does an entire branching conversation, a sales conversation, like, "Hey, I need to sell e-learning services. How do I do that?" And I want you to role play the client. And the chatbot does the whole thing as the client, bringing up objections, all that kind of stuff. And at the end, I say, okay, stop scenario. Now give me feedback on how well I sold you that product, the e-learning product. And then the chatbot comes back and gives me all my feedback. Like, well, this was a strong argument, but you didn't counter this, and you did this, but you didn't do this. And so more and more AI is going to be able to give us that feedback, especially in online situations. And the thing I really like about it, using AI, I mean, it still has hallucinations, and I mean, it's not perfect, but I can carry it around in my pocket. So if I'm waiting in an office or if I'm in line somewhere, I can click on my chatbot and I can have this conversation and I can get that feedback. I can pick it up later. I can try that conversation again. And it's almost a mentor with infinite patience and infinite ability to give me feedback. So that, I think, is something that I'm definitely seeing as a trend. And in the book, every chapter has what we call an AI assist. And so what that is let's say we talk about developing card games for learning or escape rooms for learning or using AR, VR, or even AI coaches. There's a little portion in there that says, hey, if you're thinking of doing this, here's a way you can set something up in AI that's going to help you with this particular design.
Wow, that's cool. That's cool. You know, one of the big problems about the live feedback, even though that's great, is just the lack of scalability. So if you have 500 salespeople and they all have to send their pitch in, you know, who wants to sit there and be on the receiving side of that? And so AI actually makes it so you can enable something like this action first. And there's some really good solutions out there that I ran into recently, like that Interflexion or Bongo Learn. They're both focusing just on this feedback part, and they train the AIs to get better and provide parameters and what are the keywords you're searching for, and trying to speed and articulation and all kinds of things that are
Yeah,
laying in
it's
front.
absolutely crazy. I've seen one that track eye tracking. You know, am I looking at the avatar's eyes? I've seen one that tone. I mean, it's just incredible what it's able to do, and how it's. The only thing I worry about is if an AI avatar can train me to be the perfect salesperson. You know, let's say, why do you need me? Can't I just take that perfect salesperson AI avatar and talk to your AI avatar, and then all of a sudden the sales happen without you and I? So that kind
You
of
can't talk like
rattles.
that, Carl. We're not going to have any jobs.
I know that rattles around in the back of my
It's
head. I think
other
it's
people
gonna
that
be
lose their jobs with AI,
real.
not us.
Right.
All right. Give me some real-world examples. Give me a program. How does this look in the real world?
So yeah, so let's say that you we lock, let's say that we're doing compliance training, you know, and we're training somebody in the bank about not accepting bribes, right? So that's a bad thing to do. Instead of having the training start with the learning objective and why bribes are bad and what, just open up the training. You log in, it says, your boss has come into your office and accused a coworker of embezzling $10,000. What are you gonna do? Right, and right away you've got to take action. You've got to do something. We're not going through objectives or anything like that. We're actually forcing you to take action. Or you bring learners into a classroom and you say, okay, here's a board game. You are a company. There's four people to game, and you've got to get to the end of that board game selling insurance or thinking about the insurance industry. So that's another example would be to create again an online module and say, okay, sort these concepts into these three different piles, right? The concept might be big security breaches, not a security breach, maybe a security breach, right? And so right away, I've got to make decisions about security briefs, breaches before you even tell me what it is and how it works and all that kind of stuff. And so like, well, what is a security breach? Well, that seems like it would be. Is that okay? Okay, I wonder. And so now, let's say one, I'm like, I wasn't sure if it was a breach or not. As the instruction progresses, I'm going to be more attuned to that particular concept because I wasn't sure about it. There's actually some research that shows when we make a decision, if even if it's incorrect, even if we're like guessing at it, our mind actually experiences more neural processing, even if we eventually get it right, because it's not sure of the answer. And so it takes more work when we don't know the answer. I think one of the mistakes we make is it doesn't take as much work when we are confident and knowledgeable of the answer. And that's not how we grow. Like, you don't grow by studying what you already know. You grow by studying things that you don't know or decisions that you don't know how to make.
Wow. And so that makes a lot of sense. Is it harder to design something like that up front, more expensive, or is it you
Well,
just get used to it?
yeah, that's a good. So, it becomes easier if you read the book, but wink, wink.
Worse.
But actually, it's not something that designers are used to. And so that's a problem. So it does take a little bit longer, and it does take a little bit more focus, and it does take a little bit more energy and effort. Once you start doing that and thinking with that mindset, that philosophy, it becomes much easier. And so basically, think of it this way. If you most training, most traditional training has, the learning objectives, then you have a little bit of the terms and concepts, then you have a little bit of the information, and then maybe you do something, a practice or a. So if you just move that practice to the front and then work in feedback, that as you give the feedback, you're teaching the term. As you give the feedback, you're enforcing the objective. As you give the feedback, you are highlighting lessons learned. So if you do it correctly like that, it won't take a order of, it's not an order of magnitude difference. It's just little tweaks and subtleties that will make the instruction more engaging. And actually, the irony is, it makes it more fun and fun's maybe not the right word, more interesting for the learner. I think a lot of what we do with compliance training and with mandatory training is we give the rules and regulations, and we don't really show experientially how this applies to you. Like, you're like, oh, I would never take a bribe in a bank, I'm fine. But what happens when someone gives you a very large gift because they've been your customer for 20 years? And then they come back to you and say, hey, I want a bigger loan now. And then you're like, well, is that really, is that, can I, is that, am I compromised then? And so by putting people in situations where they're like, I don't know if I'm compromised, then all of a sudden it resonates. And that's what we want. Too much learning doesn't resonate. Like, oh, I would never put my hand in a machine. Well, not in a perfect situation, but let's say you're behind on your order. Let's say it jammed. Let's say the guy's like, oh, I put my hand in it all the time. Let's say that, it's your anniversary weekend and you want to get away early on Friday. So yeah, you just stick your hand in and move that thing along, right? And that's when people make mistakes and get hurt and things like that. And so, but in a perfect world, we don't do that. Oh yes, do not put your hand in the machine. So the idea really is to put them in a situation where they are thinking like they normally would, not the defenses of training, not the defenses of what I think the designer would do, but yeah, this is what I would do. Oh, okay. Now that wasn't the right thing to do. The action I took wasn't the right action. And now I can see the consequences. And so that's the idea. Does it take a little bit longer? I think so, yes, but is it order of magnitude? No, I don't think so.
How does gamification and micro learning play into all this, considering your past specialties or current specialties in those areas?
Yeah. So I originally wanted to name the book Beyond Gamification because I think gamification has gone down a pathway that's really focused a lot on leaderboards, badges, and points. And no one plays a game just for a leaderboard or just for points or whatever. They play it for the challenge. They play it for to see how they can do against other people for lots of different reasons, but not for those reasons. And so I really wanted people to start thinking about who design instruction to think about, well, what's next? Like, how do I really get the learner involved in a situation? Because gamification can be very passive, right? You answer a multiple choice question and you get points. Oh yeah, so I'm not really maybe making a critical decision. I'm not really deciding whether to play this card or this card or sort this or sort that. You might do that with points, but so you can add the two together, but I think the default often is too much like, okay, do something passively, like watch a video and get points, log into the system, get like, that's not really an effective way to do that. So I wanted to put forth the idea of, let's do something beyond what we're doing. Let's push the limit. Let's make people do it. And learning by doing is nothing new, but it's really gotten pushed to the back burner. The other thing that started to get me thinking was, if AI can generate like all kinds of content like passively, like, hey, give me the regulations on taking bribes in a bank, or give me the regulation on lockout, tag out, then we just get this information as just passive. Really, are we helping the learners or not? So I want people now at this inflection to think, well, what can we do to really bring home the learning? If you can get the information anywhere, where's the behavior change? Where's the real performance improvement? And that comes from doing things, not being passive. So that was kind of like beyond gamification. The
Oh, that's
micro
interesting.
learning, you can always inject micro learning into different situations, I think, to help, pre-learning, post-learning, those kind of thing. But you could do it more interestingly or effectively. So, for example, the book talks a little bit about educational cliffhangers, or
I'm gonna ask you
seeking
about
out
that.
information, or mysteries. It amazes me that you can go on Facebook or whatever, and you can buy like mysteries in the mail, or people will send you like clues every week. Some of the biggest online communities are trying to solve real life crimes. I mean, people really enjoy this kind of deductive work, right? Trying to figure things out, inductive, deductive, both, trying to figure these things out. Why is that absent from our training? Why do we not have that in there? So that was another driver behind that. Like, let's go. And then finally, beyond even micro learning, like, I think in our world, we've gone to short, bite-sized everything, right? Political comments, learning comments, advertisements, TikTok, etc. But there's a lot of value in in-depth marinating on a subject or a topic, really thinking about strategy. So, for example, in World War II, almost every military group conducted really involved tabletop war game exercises, where you had to think of what your strategy would be. And if an opponent did this, what would you do? And if you master armies over here, where are your weaknesses? And could you shore up those weaknesses? Like, really deep thinking about the environment. And I think we lose that a little bit. And if we think about competitive landscape, let's think deeply about what competitive landscape we're in. So if we did this move, what would an opponent do? Or if an upstart develops this technology, what will we do in this case? And when you think through and recognize the dangers, or the SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunity, and threats, you could take that and say, oh, we can counter that by doing that with that deep thinking. So, all types of learning have all types of applications, micro learning and gamification. But let's not forget deeper learning. Let's not forget learning that really has an impact on the individual. And that's kind of, again, also kind of in the background as I've written this book. I've tried to take I've been in the field for a while. And so I'm trying to take all of what I've learned from my years in the field and condense it into these approaches, methodologies that people can use to create, truly impactful training.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think a lot of people in our industry, or a lot of instructional technologists, instructional designers like me, I think are feeling a little apprehension with AI and really taking the easier parts of our job of just presenting that information. So maybe what this is a really opportunity for us to provide more value inside of our organizations by helping identify, areas of impact and prioritizing this. And using this to move the business needle and keep us relevant, keep instructional designers relevant by taking this higher level learning that actually is tied to ideally back to business impact if
Absolutely. I mean,
programs.
I think the learning should be about like, how come we don't let people practice, right? I just think it's an analogy I use often is, Tom Brady at one point was the greatest quarterback of all time, still maybe. And guess what? Tom Brady showed up to practice every day. By the time Tom Brady got to the Buccaneers, he probably should have known how to play football, right? So why did he practice? To get better and better, so he could do it subconsciously, so he could do it in sleep, so he knew which way you're gonna. And in business and industry, a lot of times we go, oh yeah, I've been a salesperson for 20 years. I don't need any training, right? I've worked in
I've been
insurance
humbled
for
everywhere.
15 years. I don't need any training, right? And so it's, don't think of it as training, think of it as practice. We all need practice. And action first learning is nudging people to that direction of practicing what they know. And when you practice, you need a coach. And who's the coach? The designer of the instruction, right? Or the deliverer of the instruction. So that, I think, is where the value is.
That's cool. That's cool. We had the CEO of Memorize, language learning app. On the podcast here in the last year or so, and I was making the exact same points from language learning. You can practice to say I want a coffee and order a coffee 100 times, but there's nothing like getting in front of the barista and getting smacked down in Paris, when you try to do it. And so it's the whole idea of those applications now is just to bring that practice, so you just get rote and you can get in these different situations, because sometimes the barista may say this or do this or hand you wrong things. As a way, you just keep on reinforcing, to get
Yeah,
into that
exactly.
automatic stage. Our conversations always go so fast,
They do.
because you're so interesting. But so, what if? So we're running towards the end, so we're gonna have to get some advice questions here. What's your advice for organizations to make this change? Is there any process? Do you just start doing it and people will like it, or do you have to like sell this internally first to try to
Well,
do it?
so yeah, I'm a big advocate of beg for forgiveness. So I would
Okay.
say take your learning, redesign it with this philosophy, launch it, and then see what happens. I think people will like it, so you might not have to beg a lot for forgiveness.
And if an instructor or instructional designer or really anybody that's in charge of this could take away just one idea from your book, what do you think is the most important takeaway?
I think so. One thing I didn't mention is there's an element of reflection in action first learning. So you do the action, then you have to reflect on it. Otherwise, you just have an experience. So what I would take away, what I would give them the phrase action first learning and reflection. So if you do that, you're going to get the most value out of your instructional efforts.
Outstanding. Outstanding. Where can you get the book?
So the book is on Amazon, so you can pre-order it now. It's on Barnes and Noble, and it's available through ATD as well. And it's really—I'll just kind of show the thing I like about the book is it's got action first learning, and then my colleague Kevin Thorne has done some cartoons because if you think of Action Comics, so he's done like some cartoons for every chapter. So it's really cool. It's a fun book, but it's also a deeply, I think, impactful opportunity to create really good instruction.
Outstanding. Well, you've been leading the industry for 25, 30 years. I've been following you forever. It's great to see your progress here because you're always out pushing. One time we sat on a panel discussion, it was probably 15 years together, and you asked me my thoughts about gamification. And I said, "What's gamification?" And I think that was a good indication of how you're always out in front of things. And so I'm sure action first learning is a great way here to start taking boring learning and making it more impactful. And so thanks for sharing it with us. Thanks for writing the book and leading the industry here on all our new thoughts. So it's great to have you back
Thanks
here.
for having me. This has been fantastic. Always enjoy coming and speaking with you.
Thank you for listening and tuning in to another episode of the Talented Learning Show. You can find more of our fiercely independent content at talentedlearning.com. Have a great day, and we'll see you on the next.